This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com. So another item on our to-discuss list comes from an email that we got from Danelle Butler about a Pew report that came out trying to discern the exact timing or the exact barrier between Generation X and the millennials. Who are the millennials was the, I guess, what this report was trying to get at?
No, no, no. It was the other way around. It was trying to distinguish millennials versus
Gen Z. Right. Excuse me.
Not that it matters.
It doesn't matter.
Trying to distinguish between a unicorn and a man.
Well, yeah, and then I think the first shot against that in sociology Twitter was Kieran Healy, who was just saying, "Come on, Pew, like this is bunk stuff." But is it bunk stuff? What do you guys think about these generational theories? The Gen X's, the millennials, the baby boomers, and all that. Is that something that you think there's something to it, or is it just bunk?
Well, maybe it's just because I'm a cynical Gen Xer, but I think it's full of shit. So, I mean, I distinctly, and I say this as like somebody who used to think it was cool, and then I kind of learned it wasn't. So like when I was in high school, I remember reading an article either in the New Republic or the Atlantic by Howe and Strauss, who were the guys who coined the term millennial. And it was talking about, like, all about what millennials were going to be like, because they had this elaborate dialectical theory of cohort replacement, where it's like basically every generation, they said that there were like cycles of like three or four generational types, and every generation reacts to not be like its parents. And so you end up getting this, you know, repeating cycle that goes all the way back to the English Civil War. And so based on that, they made this prediction that, you know, the millennials would be like very much like go-getters who like kind of like put their noses to the grindstone and just worked and, you know, just worked hard and didn't really complain about things. And it was almost exactly the opposite of the generational stereotypes we have of them now. So, you know, regardless of whether the, you know, their prediction was right or the stereotype is accurate, either way, it's just kind of interesting, like how far off the mark they were of the stereotype. And given that, like, the currency that they had, and that, you know, they were all these magazines and they had best selling books and all sorts of marketing people bought them, you'd expect it to have been true, at least in a performative sense, right? If you have a theory that everybody reads, it should become true. But that theory that everybody read and bought into failed to become true shows what a god awful theory it was, that it couldn't even be true performatively. And then just in general, if you look at survey data, there's no such thing as like cyclical cohort effects. I mean, cohort effects tend to be monotonic and gradual. The only attitude I'm aware of where you do see kind of an up and down pattern is abortion. Aside from that, everything's basically monotonic, right? It just goes in one direction. And you definitely don't see, you know, big discontinuities, right? I mean, cohort change is gradual. And there's no big difference between somebody born in 1979 and somebody born in 1981, because the person born in 1979 is a late Gen Xer and the person born in 1981 is a millennial, right? They're basically both people born around 1980.
Yeah. Just that, you know, I think as sociologists, no matter what we study, like, we can all agree that categorizing a continuous variable without an extremely good reason is really dumb. Yeah. And we can agree with that full stop. Yeah. The idea that, like, if I'd been born 6 months earlier, I'd see the world around me with a Gen X lens of sarcasm or irony, you know, is honestly, it sounds like astrology telling me that if I'm born on a certain day, I'm a Scorpio and I'm not a Sagittarius. But let me say that I was technically born in 1981, and so I'm in this newly concretized Pew definition of a millennial generation. And so as the token millennial, I think, on the podcast today.
I'm already finding you insufferable.
Yes, my just sincerity and enthusiasm is coming through. You know, I do want to just say maybe part of me feels like this is another case of sociology being a wet blanket. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it. This is what we do for our jobs, right? Like, we create precise instruments of measurement of the social world. But I want us to kind of like also be receptive to the fact that there are non-sociologists making observations, right? They're like, formulating patterns, trying to seek order out of chaos. And so it could be, right, that there's a sort of spidey sense out there that millennials are their own thing. And so I want to remain like open to the idea of the exceptional millennial while, you know, like still sort of having our keen sociological focus on it.
Well, so this is what I will say about this, right? I mean, you know, I'm going to be kind of a wet blanket, but also at the same time, say, I think that, I mean, there's something very functional about having this millennial group, you know, be made more concrete. I mean, if you think about it, like I think about millennials and Gen Xers and baby boomers, et cetera, the same way I think about tweens, right? Yep. They're not really a thing, right? But they are a thing and very useful for marketing purposes, right? The same way, you know, sort of creating, you know, the group has Hispanic also then gives you this big, you know, market, you know, this big, you know, market to sell stuff to that you think and you decide they want, right, as a collective group. And so in some ways, I think it is useful, right? You have this idea that millennials are this way and they watch this kind of thing, right? You know, just, you know, you take surveys and you see the average millennial likes this. And so you say, this is what millennials like.
Well,
right. And yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, you're getting to the point that even if boundaries are arbitrary, you need boundaries if you need to make decisions on the basis of categories. For instance, if we don't have a strict definition of millennials, we won't know who to send to Gitmo.
No, but okay, but hold on. So yes, we know that things exist along a continuum, and we know that cohort changes are gradual. But in social science, we always sort of discuss things. We always characterize continua in sharp categories, and they're ideal types, right? And what do you think about the possibility that somebody who was born with the internet always existing has a qualitatively different worldview or a life experience from someone who had never grown up with the computer in the home? And that, yes, maybe that it's silly to put a sharp boundary on it, but these are ideal types, and maybe there are qualitative, you know, big picture cohort differences or long-term cohort differences.
Nita, how old were you when you got an email address?
Ooh, so we're talking like AOL, yeah, dial-up. I was probably like maybe 11, 12-ish.
Okay, so I was like 14 or 15, and it was also AOL dial-up, which makes sense because I'm about 5 years older than you. So, or three or 4 years older than you. So what's the difference there, right? So Nita's experience is basically the same as mine, right? Because I'm 4 years older than her, give or take. And now in contrast, you know, someone who's currently 26 years old, right, who's, you know, if you buy the Pew definitions as part of Nita's generation, then that person probably had an email address very young and, you know, had a computer very young and that sort of thing. So I would submit that Nita's childhood experiences are basically the same as mine, and very different from someone, you know, she's at the early end of her quote unquote generation. And I'd say she has more in common with me, somebody at the late end of my quote unquote generation, than she does with somebody at the, you know, who's 15 years younger than her, but theoretically part of the same bin. So,
yeah, but you're both sort of sitting near the boundary of two generations, right?
Like, yeah, but that's why, like, boundaries don't work.
Okay, right? It's hard, boundaries don't. But like, as a kid who grew up after 9/11, like I have students now, they have no conception of what it was like to experience the Cold War. They have no conception of what it was like to live, you know, in America before 9/11, let's say. They probably have a qualitatively different worldview, or things that seem abnormal to me seem perfectly normal to them. Don't you think there are, maybe they're not drawing the boundaries correctly, but do you think there's a possibility that these types of generational differences exist, but, you know, we can't pin them down with any
I think some of these generational differences do exist, but, you know, at the same time, I mean, like, you know, the sorts of examples that have been brought up, I mean, I think someone who lives in a rural community here in the United States who would be labeled a quote unquote millennial, right, has a very different experience than someone who's designated a millennial, like, you know, who grew up in San Francisco or in New York, right? Or in Atlanta. And so the other thing that I worry about is that the things that we look for in millennials are things that, once again, we're looking for in people who aren't necessarily representative, not just of a country, you know, but also of the world.
Well, so, I mean,
like your Manhattan intern who's lazy.
Well, so I think Leslie has a point there, where there are cohort effects. I don't think that there's cohort effects that you can divide into, you know, 15 or 20 year bins, but there are cohort effects. You know, growing up, broadly speaking, during the Cold War is a different experience than growing up, broadly speaking, after 9/11. And with the exception of the kind of things that you could plug into, like, a regression discontinuity, you know, so I do think that there could be kind of like sharp discontinuous cohort effects if there's some type of policy change that comes into effect, you know, for people with a certain birthday, and people born one day earlier literally experience a different policy environment than people born one day later. But with the exception of that, I don't think you have generations. I think you have cohort effects, and they're continuous. And then, like Leslie was saying, it's just one aspect of people's identity. And, you know, rural, urban, Black, white, Latino, Asian, male, female, these types of things can have bigger effects than cohort effects. And, you know, I mean, there might be one brief period where cohort effects were stronger than basically anything else for determining attitudes on gay marriage. But aside from that, I think cohort effects are going to be weaker than basically anything else.
Yeah, it's probably totally bunk. I mean, I read articles about people describing millennials today, and it reads almost exactly like similar pieces that I remember reading about Generation X when I was coming up. It's basically these. This is like the old man yells at cloud type of industry.
But, you know, what I appreciate about this old saw that, like, gets brought up over and over again is for me, it takes me back to Intro to Sociology, you know, that it's about sort of the sociological imagination, C. Wright Mills, that all of this is about the intersection of biography and history, right? Personal troubles, public issues. And so every time we rehash the millennials argument, it does remind me, right, that so much of what we're seeing around us is this interaction of, like, what is the history that we're born into and the kind of time period in which we're coming of age. And then all of the different sort of smaller facets of our personal identity markers that are shaping what that broader historical moment, you know, is sort of doing.
For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.